Coming up, me and Tom Haberstroh are talking about a pretty crazy week in the NBA, including a big Lakers comeback against the Knicks on Thursday. And then later, my interview with AJ DiBonsa, incoming freshman to BYU, number one ranked from Brockton, Massachusetts. All right, Tom, let's talk about the Western Conference playoff race. The Thunder, one seed, all locked up. Lakers, 40-21, eight in a row. Big win against the Knicks in overtime. We'll talk about that later. They're currently the two seed. Right now, I want to rank the potential West play-in teams. These are the threats to the Thunder and currently the Lakers in the two seed. Sound good to you, Tom? We're going to rank these teams, okay?
Let's do it. Are you sure the Thunder are going to lock in that first seed? I just don't know. I don't know.
It would be the most epic collapse starting on Friday if the Blazers beat the B team for the Thunder, if that were to happen.
Yeah, I think we can lock it in that the Thunder are going to be the number one seed. Yeah.
And the Lakers forgot how to lose. So, hey, you never know. They're the two seed at worst. So these are going to be the teams that you least want to play to most want to play if you're the Thunder as the one seed or whoever ends up the two seed currently, the Lakers. So the teams in play-in contention are the 6 seed to the 12 seed right now. The Warriors are the 6 seed, Wolves at 7, Clippers at 8, Kings at 9, Mavs 10, Suns 11, Blazers 12. Of those 7 teams, number one, no surprise, the team you'd least want to face, it's the Golden State Warriors. They probably shouldn't even be included in the play-in race right now. They're the 6 seed, 3 back from the Rockets, who have lost 11 of 16 games, 3.5 back from the Grizzlies, who've lost 4 in a row. Ja Morant complaining about shoulder issues as well, so that doesn't seem to be getting better. They have a 12.5 net rating, third best in the NBA behind the Cavs and the Pistons ever since they got Jimmy Butler and Steph in these games. Tom, one of my worst takes of the year earlier this season, as I said, looks like Steph is showing signs of decline. Last 12 games, 30.3 points, 50-40-90. Steph looks all the way back. I didn't know if he had this in him. He clearly has this in him. He looks absolutely incredible, and he did again on Thursday as well.
Yeah, you said it on X, and I had it in my notes, and the shots that he made against Brooklyn were some of the craziest shots he's hit in his career. I mean, the half-court shot, the one where I think my favorite one was this, like, in the second quarter, he had this runner in the lane where he came across and he hit a bank shot off of his left foot going to his left.
God.
It was flying this way out of bounds. He took a shot off his left foot and banked it with the perfect touch. And I'm just sitting here like, that's a circus shot. It probably isn't even going to hit the highlight reel, but the level of difficulty on that is crazy. And then the touch around the basket, Jimmy Butler, when he's on the floor without Steph, they've done such a good job of basically maintaining leads. And I think he's plus 28 with Luka. I mean, not Luka Doncic, man. That would be pretty crazy. Stephen Curry off the floor and Jimmy Butler on the floor with like about 100 minutes without Stephen Curry. And that's huge. The fact that they can basically have one star, a go-to score, an alpha score, no matter when the game is, that's a huge advantage compared to what they had with Andrew Wiggins. And Stephen Curry, man, yeah, I wrote it down too. 30.3 points in his last 12 games, 51% shooting, 44% shooting from three, and 90%. So he's 50-40-90, like you said. But this is peak Stephen Curry. We're seeing peak Stephen Curry, peak LeBron James, and they're both supposed to be in the twilight of their careers, Kev. This is insane.
It's nuts. And I think with Steph, you mentioned that leaning finish and some of the layups and the touch and all that. The thing with Steph earlier in the year that worried me, you know, is he wasn't getting to the rim as often. He wasn't finishing as well at the rim, and that might have been due to the knee issue he was dealing with. But ever since, like the last 12 games, 69% in the restricted area, up from 60%, 61% from mid-range, up from 45%. 44% from three, up from 39%. Like you said, he's looking like peak Steph, looking like top five Steph. there's just no signs of decline. He looks like full on Stephen Curry. Like there's nothing else to say. That's what he looks like. And if he looks like this, and in this game, you mentioned Butler in the minutes without Steph, like they're like, if you didn't watch the game, you know, Steph minus 16 somehow on 40 points on 20 field goal attempts, Butler plus 17 in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that is indicative again of what the Warriors have been doing. Now, I think with Golden State, like this is a weird game. It wasn't as close as it really was. They were up 10 with a minute and a second to go. Then the Nets had a layup and there's a turnover and then they got a layup and an and one and 10 points is suddenly five. And then there's almost a backcourt violation, but Steph goes out of bounds and Nets hit a three. And by that point, there's 10.1 seconds left. Warriors hit some free throws. It's basically over. The thing from tonight's game is Pods got hurt. Got hurt 1 minute into the game, back issue. And so for Golden State, Pods has been so good for them, Tom, and their schedule's been very, very weak. I don't want to diminish what they've done with Jimmy Butler, but they do have a tougher stretch if Pods is out for any extended period of time. Pistons on Saturday, Blazers on Monday, before four games in six nights against the Kings, Knicks, Nuggets, and Bucks. So there is a bit of an uptick in opponent quality coming up for the Warriors that I think is going to be a better barometer for who they really are rather than the games we've seen them play so far.
100%. I love what I'm seeing from Draymond and Jimmy Butler, their actions that they have. There's this set that they're running quite a bit where Draymond has the ball at like the top of the key. He's almost got his back to the basket. And he looks over his shoulder and Jimmy Butler has sealed his guy and he throws this lob and he gets layups to Jimmy Butler all the time. And that's stuff that you would imagine would be in the offseason, you know, in training camp, they would run these sets or kind of find these actions that they can get easy buckets for Jimmy Butler at the rim, but they're doing it already. And that's the thing is like, they've already got this chemistry, very high IQ players, veteran players, championship tested players, and you're seeing that they're figuring out ways to work together, even though they're not 3-point shooters and they're figuring out a way to get easy buckets at the rim in the half court. And you mentioned the shooting of Steph Curry around the basket. I think part of it is a lot of the misses that he was having around the rim were getting no foul calls earlier in the season. And if you look at the numbers, he had three games before Jimmy Butler arrived, three games with at least 8 free throw attempts before Jimmy Butler arrived, that in 42 games. So three high volume free throw attempt games for Steph Curry in 42 games. With Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry, another 9 free throws in Thursday night's game against Brooklyn. He's had 6 in 12 games. So he's getting to the free throw line a lot more. And I'm wondering if there's like some sort of osmosis he's getting from Jimmy Butler, who's been living at the free throw line his whole career. For some reason, Steph Curry is getting these calls now, and he's now living at the free throw line much in the same way that Jimmy Butler does. So it's just everything around Steph Curry, not just the percentages.
This is like when the NBA put Austin Reeves at the free throw line 20 times a game a couple of years ago.
Dude, not quite that. Not quite. We're not there yet. We're not there yet. Man, that was crazy. Remember that? It was like 15 free throws, 20 free throws. It was nuts. And hey, by the way, on that, well, I guess we'll get to the Clippers later, but James Harden with 20 free throws, vintage James Harden. So these old guys are getting these new tricks again.
Mm-hmm. They are. So let's go to number two in my play-in rankings here, the teams that you'd least to most want to face if you're a top seed in the Western Conference. Number two, Minnesota Timberwolves. I think you just got to respect them. They've been average for about a month now, 8-7, but Gobert is about to come back from his lower back injury. Knowing what they were in the West Finals last year, knowing what Anthony Edwards showed he can be in the playoffs, knowing what the defense can be with Rudy Gobert, I think it's hard not to put them number two in these rankings. Is there any team you'd put ahead of them, Tom?
I thought about the Clippers here. The Clippers, without Norm Powell, though, it's tough sledding. I mean, they got a good win with that 50 piece from James Harden. But with Dante DiVincenzo back and with Rudy Gobert on the way back, this is a team that's getting healthier. I continue to love Naz Reid, and I want him to continue to get crunch time minutes for the Timberwolves. And look, they're getting healthier. If Rudy Gobert can come back with Julius Randle getting healthier, they're going to be a tough out. Now, the thing with Minnesota is whether they're going to be able to get really good offense in the half court in the postseason. Anthony Edwards, as you had written before, he's taking a lot more three-pointers, and they need more of that three-point shooting, the three-point spacing, in order to get healthy half-court offense. But yeah, Minnesota's probably number two. I have the Clippers right behind them, though.
I have a different team at number three, and there's a reason for this. It's the Suns, okay? And here's why. Because if the Suns make the play-in, it means that they're doing something right, because right now they're 2.5 back from the Mavs for the 10, 3.5 back from the Kings, 4 back from the Clippers. They have the toughest schedule by far remaining in the NBA. They're facing teams with a win percentage average of 59%. 20 games remaining. Twice they face the Celtics, the Bucks, the Rockets, and the Kings. They face one time the Nuggets, Grizzlies, Lakers, Cavs, Wolves, Knicks, Warriors, Thunder. Like, if they beat enough of those teams to move into the play-in, and then they advance out of the play-in beating whoever that they get to beat, that's got to indicate that this team might have fixed what was wrong. And like, we're coming off within a week ago, KD's like brushing off Budenholzer. They're relying on Colin Gillespie to win a game in the fourth quarter, but maybe it had to be weird. So I just think I'm putting the Suns there because if they actually get in, like, they had a great run, right? Like, does that logic make sense?
If they get things together and they basically become a 70-win team to get into the play-in,
yes,
there, maybe. But
exactly.
Remember, they got swept last year. They're 4-7 against the spread in the playoffs with Kevin Durant. That's not a good sign. Is that even if they get in to the play-in scenario, it hasn't been great in the playoffs with the KD Suns. So I'm not super worried about the Suns, even if they get into the playoffs. I still have the Clippers
But that strength of schedule, though, like, if they get through those teams, that's crazy. It seems impossible for them to make the playoffs. That's what I'm saying. If they make it as the 8 or 7, like, that means something really is magically happening with them.
Or it means that KD at his age is going to be barely able to walk because he went through that gauntlet to get into the playoffs. So, like, one way or a counterpoint, they might not have anything left if they go through basically a 600 win percentage or strength of schedule getting into the playoffs. So I don't know, man, because like, what you're saying is the playoffs start now. It's at Denver, at Dallas, at Memphis, at Houston, Sac, Lakers, Toronto. There's of the 17 of the next 20 games are against 500 or better teams. So the playoffs start now. And so you're saying that KD and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal and your guy Bol Bol are going to basically turn into a playoff juggernaut over the next 20 games and then scare the Oklahoma City Thunder or the Lakers. I'm not seeing it. I got the Clippers ahead of them.
All right, so I have the Clippers number 4 on my rankings here, which, you know, I feel like this is a fair spot. What's the case for them up to number 3? And you argued for maybe even number 2 for the Clippers.
Yeah, Kawhi looks great. Kawhi looks not like peak Kawhi, but he looks good enough that I feel like if you have James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, my big variable here is they looked such a different team without Norm Powell. I never thought I'd say this, that the Clippers need Norm Powell so badly right now that they're just not really reaching what they need to be without that guy who's, even with Kawhi back, he's still a guy that is going to be able to get you 20, 25 points a game. And the three-point shooting, they're not a good three-point shooting team. But with Norm Powell, that is an elite floor spacer. He does a lot for them. And without him over the last few weeks, it hasn't been pretty. I thought they'd be better with Kawhi back, but without Norm Powell, it hasn't been pretty. So if they do get into the playoffs and they have Kawhi and James Harden, that's a scary team. That team scares me more than a KD and Devin Booker team.
I think these top four teams are in a tier of their own. Maybe you disagree with the Suns. Maybe you think it's just three. But in terms of like teams that could, you know, who knows, maybe win that first round series over the one or the two seed. Because then at five, I have the Blazers. That might make you very happy that I have your Portland Trail Blazers at number five. And here's why. They have a top 10 defense over 2 months now. Like they're going to be tough. They're going to be feisty if they actually get in. They're four back from the Mavericks. I wouldn't expect them to get in. I would hope they don't get in because I'd rather get the more lottery odds if I'm Portland personally and just fight hard through the rest of the season. But if they were to get in, their defense is looking awesome, dude. And you see it every game because you cover them.
Yeah, Tomani Kamara, you put him on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and all bets are off. I would love to see that matchup in the playoffs if we get it.
Not all bets are off. OKC is winning in four.
I'm saying when you have Tomani Kamara, you have a chance at winning a game if you put him against the opposing best player. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to win that matchup. Ridiculous.
Does Kamara make an all-D team, Tom?
Yes. I wrote about it for Tom the Finder this week that he's second in defensive stops in the NBA.
Ball Finder, the new website. Great stat.
Yep. You have not just the steals, not just the blocks, but also the offensive fouls drawn that, by the way, is also adding a foul on the opposing star player like they did with Evan Mobley. The Blazers fouled him out of the game in part because Tomani Kamara drew a charge on him. So you can argue that steals are more important than charges. I can understand that argument because it a live ball turnover out of it. But I would argue that charges are underrated. And you saw it in that Lakers game with Jalen Brunson taking charges. It's just another way of rim protection that Tomani Kamara might not be rising up every time to block a shot, but he is such a good defender and he gets under everybody's skin. And we're not going to get the chance on Friday to watch Tomani and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander go head to head. But every time he goes against, he locked down Jaylen Brown against the Boston Celtics. So the problem is that Peyton Pritchard and Derek White would offer 40 each, which is the first duo for the Celtics in Celtics history to ever have 40 pieces by teammates, which is insane. There's only one Tomani Kamara. They play excellent defense. And over the last, I think it's since January 19th, since January 19th, when Chauncey Billups made the switch to move Shaedon Sharpe into the second unit, the defense is now second in the NBA over that span behind the Los Angeles Lakers. So since January 19th, they are a top two defense. Incredible turnaround.
Number six, I have the Sacramento Kings. There's nothing scary about this team in a playoff series. Average offensively, still finding their way offensively as well. And currently right now, Sabonis out with a hamstring injury and, you know, stuff like that can linger. So we'll see how he responds when he actually gets back. And then number seven, they're currently the 10 seed. They're free falling. The Dallas Mavericks, Kyrie Irving. After my last podcast, Kyrie Irving tore his ACL that night, out for the season. Sadly, I mean, it's such a major bummer, for Mavericks fans that Kyrie, after all of this madness with Luka traded, especially after Thursday night with Luka dominating down the stretch for the Lakers, just like every time I watch him play, it's like, what the hell was Nico Harrison thinking? I still cannot believe that the Mavericks actually made that trade. And you have AD out. Shams Charania reports this week that he could possibly be shut down for the remainder of the season with his adductor injury that might require surgery. And you got Lively out and Gafford out. And I mean, they've lost 5 out of 6. They should tank. They're 4 games separated from the 10th best odds, which is currently Portland. I mean, I just feel horrible for Mavs fans that we're actually talking about them as they're not even a play-in threat. They should tank. Oh, Luka's a Laker. Kyrie's out with a torn ACL. What the hell, Tom?
My cousin, I just saw her in Portland. She doesn't watch the NBA. First thing she said to me, she goes, why did they make that trade? Didn't even mention the Luka Doncic, Lakers, Mavs. She can't even pronounce Luka Doncic's name. And she's just why did they make that trade?
How does she pronounce it, I wonder?
She doesn't even try it. She's like the Luka guy. That's where it's gone, is that not even sports
fans.
The
fat one, according to Nico. The chubby guy, the chubby white guy.
Hookah Luka. All right. I mean,
Hookah Luka.
It's insane. And like, you know, the process of the trade, we were hammering him before Kyrie got hurt, before AD got hurt, before Luka Doncic looks like he's in great shape over with the Lakers and winning games down the stretch against the Knicks and against everybody. The process was terrible. And here you have Mark Cuban doing an interview. I don't know if you saw this for WFAA. Referring to the Mavs in like the third person, not saying us when we traded the Mavs. He's saying when the Mavs made that deal, I kind of wish they got more in the deal, as if he doesn't also own a chunk of the Mavs. It's so he's disassociated himself from the Mavs. Mm-hmm. That's how bad this trade was, that Mark Cuban wants nothing to do with this Luka trade. And he's saying it would have been nice if they got four first round picks in the deal, but we're not talking about that now. It's a colossal disaster of a trade. I would argue probably the worst trade in American sports. I can't speak for the soccer leagues around the world. But I got to imagine there's no trade that's ever been worse than this one.
No, I mean, unless there's 1918 potential here, Curse of the Bambino, with Babe Ruth going from the Red Sox to the Yankees, Curse of the Don. If the Mavericks go many, many decades, 100 years without a NBA Finals appearance or championship again, well, it feels like they're cursed right now. I feel bad. I just feel bad for Mavericks fans, man. And I said this in a Yahoo Sports video earlier in the week. I recorded that after the Kyrie news broke. And like, if you're Patrick Dumont, like I said, Nico Harrison should be fired is what I said in the video. And like, you have a lot of people that are like, yeah, you're right. Like the Mavericks should fire him. And then you have a lot of people who are like, no, this is on ownership. They're cheap. They didn't want to pay him the supermax. Nico's just, he's being controlled by Dumont. It's like, well, no. All indications are Nico did this on his own, first of all. That's the information we have. My sources have said what many people have reported. That's the indication that Nico did this on his own and that ownership was just like, okay, we've empowered the front office. And that's what owners do sometimes. Sometimes owners are very involved. Ishbia with the Suns. That's like new owner syndrome saying, no, 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 we got to do these trades. We got to go all in. Do it, James Jones. Do it. That's the owner being very heavily involved with basketball operations. And then there's cases where sometimes the owner is hands off and they let the front office do what they want to do and they just give final approval, but they trust and empower the front office. That's what Wick Grossbeck is like with the Celtics. He was like that with Danny Ainge. He's like that with Brad Stevens. Those front offices have done a good job. James Dolan with the Knicks was like that with Phil Jackson for negative reasons. And he's like that now with Leon Rose for good reasons, it seems. So with the Mavericks, my understanding is that's the case. They empowered Nico Harrison in that front office to make moves and they gave the final sign off. So I think for fans saying that like, oh, no, no, it doesn't change anything. It does, Tom. It does, Tom. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're losing owners, like you're losing Cuban talking in third person, as you said, and you're losing fans. I really think the only way to make things feel right is by removing that reminder of who made this horrible trade.
I think, Kevin, they're going to extend Kyrie. If it's not the max, they're going to do a big time contract extension. Oh, boy. With Kyrie.
And what, he misses half of next season?
Yeah. I think it's going to be a Klay Thompson situation to almost double down on the poor decision to like go all in this like 2 to 3 year window and stick by. Because you saw that comment from Nico Harrison in support of Kyrie Irving. He released the statement.
Invokes
that
Kobe.
Doesn't seem like associating him with Kobe. Can we not associate with Lakers players, please? Can you associate maybe like I said this on the Big Number with Dan Devine. Go listen to it. We had a whole segment about this, and it drives me crazy that Patrick Dumont, when he's listing all of the great players in history who had great work ethics, according to Patrick Dumont, and skipping over Dirk Nowitzki, and then in this statement, instead of being like, we hope to have Kyrie Irving playing at a high level into his late 30s, like we had with Dirk Nowitzki here in a Mavs uniform, instead, he goes and refers to a Laker guy. Well, everybody is talking about how he's this like sleeper agent for the Los Angeles Lakers. You're now associating him, conjuring up images of Kobe Bryant when you're leading the Dallas Mavericks. What is going on here, man?
Tom, I don't know what's going on. All I know is Dumont has an opportunity here to show Mavericks fans, hey, we're moving forward from this and let's build it up again. We'll see what ends up happening there. All I know is Mark Cuban looks like he's, you know, separating himself. As you said, I've heard Dirk Nowitzki is furious about it. I'm sure that more and more will come out in the weeks and months ahead, considering the fact that, you know, we just got that Cuban quote today, and I'm sure more will come out, especially with the Lakers surging the way they are. And we'll talk about that game in a bit. We'll be right back and talk about some of the drama from this week and some other games as well. Okay, Tom, our guy Reed Sheppard scored 25 points in his first start for the Houston Rockets this week. On Thursday, the Rockets beat the Pelicans 109-97. I want to talk about that Reed game, though. 25 points. He did it, Tom. We have Hope, our number one prospect in the 24 draft. Go Reed.
God, he looks so good. And did you know what the defense he did it against was? The Oklahoma OKC. City Thunder.
SGA, Jalen Williams, Cason Wallace. Oh, my God.
And he had his full bag, man. He was hitting the middies. He gets separation. Like, dude, we all talk about his three-point shooting.
Did you see that little floater he had on, dude, I think it was Wallace, where he drove into the paint, stopped on a dime. Wallace is, like, backpedaling, hits a little floater. I'm like, oh, my God, that's college Reed Sheppard. That's the guy that I imagined.
And, dude, and then the next game out, he has like 2 points, and it's like he can't get into rhythm off the bench.
10, 11 minutes off the bench on Thursday against
the he's like a different player. And Kevin, if you do the math, in 4 pro starts, he's averaging 28 points a game. Forget that 3 of them are in the G League, but he's averaging 28 when he starts. I still believe in Reed Sheppard.
I support that stat, Tom. I fully endorse it. That's a great stat.
28 points per game as a pro. Forget about that most of them are in the G League. It's fine. We'll obscure that fact. But he's great, dude. I think he's still, in my opinion, the best prospect in this class, along with Stephen Castle and Donovan Klingon. I don't know where you would have, if you did a redraft or a re-rank of this class, where you would put Reed Sheppard, but like that game against OKC, if you give him the oxygen, if you give him the playing time, it seems like he's a completely different player. And it's not a great rookie class. It's not a great class, but I would still bet big on Reed Sheppard.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'd change. I mean, he's a small guard. I wasn't necessarily expecting, you know, big things from him as a rookie, especially considering the depth chart for the Houston Rockets. You know, I wish he would bring the aggression in ways that he does when he gets extended minutes. As I wish he would do that when he gets 10 minutes. I wish he would just be aggressive. Sometimes I feel like he's too deferential, but you know, hopefully Reed gets more opportunities over the course of the season. One other note from the Thursday night Rockets Pelicans game, for what it's worth, I did not watch this game. There's a lot of games on tonight. That one I did not have my eyeballs on. Adams and Şengün played 7 minutes together in the Thursday night game, and they outscored the Pelicans by 18. And this continues a pretty good little experimental trend we're seeing from Ime Udoka. They've played 25 minutes together with two bigs, Steven Adams and Alperen Şengün. The Rockets are now plus 39 in those 25 minutes. And Şengün, after the game, he said, "We're testing. It's working." And it reminded me of something Mark Daigneault, the Thunder head coach, talked about, you know, maybe 10 days ago, around 2 weeks ago, with Isaiah Hartenstein and playing him with Chet Holmgren. And, you know, he's like, "We're not really worried about what the opponent's doing. We know there's going to be bumps. We're just trying things out." And it was like this really good, long, elaborate answer going into the mindset of using the regular season to experiment. And I know the Thunder are in a position where they're far ahead of everybody and they can afford to experiment, but the Rockets aren't. The Rockets are in the thick of the playoff race right now. There's still a chance that they could slip out of the top six and become a play-in team. But I like that those teams are doing that versus the Knicks. They get Mitchell Robinson back, and entering the Thursday night game, he had played 0 minutes with Karl-Anthony Towns. They played 2 minutes and 15 seconds together in the second quarter, and they outscored the Lakers 9-4 in those 2 minutes and 15 seconds. Now, Tibbs, basically the entire year, Mitchell Robinson's out. He barely played his two bigs at all. And I just don't understand how with Tibbs, he doesn't use these moments to experiment. Like, why would you not want to have that tool ready to go in a postseason series? I just don't get it. Like, what do you wait until early March for, Tom, to do it really for the first time?
Well, first of all, Mitchell Robinson hasn't been healthy for him. Well, to really
but you
do
could
it,
have done. You could do that more often. You have other bigs on your roster. You could at sure. least experiment over the course of the year.
I was actually surprised he busted it out during the Lakers game. Like, he had it for a couple minutes there, like you said, and I was surprised that he went to it. And good minutes, too. So,
Tom, Jericho Sims was, like, effective off the bench in limited minutes this year, and he barely played at all with Karl Anthony Towns. Like, that's where I'm confused, where it's like, why would you not use Jericho Sims in place of Mitchell Robinson for a little bit? I'm not asking for a lot of it, but just to have the team have that tool in its bag. And it's like the same thing on offense. Like, it's all Jalen Brunson. Brunson, 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 Brunson down the stretch of that game before he turns his ankle. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's like, are you not running anything through Karl Anthony Towns? Are you not running anything through Mikal Bridges? You're paying $40 million. Like, you have all these other guys, and it's all the same thing over and over and over and over again with his minutes, with his system, with his lineups. It's so easy to blame the coach, but it's just these same issues that he had at all of his other stops. This is the same conversation now as it was then.
Yeah, a lot of conventional, just like play your starters like it's 90s basketball and just run them into the ground. And now you're going to see it with Jalen Brunson out. He could barely put any weight on that ankle. It was an ugly turn. It was not something that, you know, we can blame on minutes or we can put on for leaving him in there in a blowout situation. It wasn't one of those situations with Tom Thibodeau. But to your point, now this team is going to have to play extended minutes without Jalen Brunson. And we just don't have many examples of this because he plays those five starters for almost 40 minutes a game. So I don't know, man. I'm with you. Look, they had LeBron guarding Cat, you know, at the five. Like, LeBron was playing point center for much of this game, and similar against the Denver Nuggets, he was guarding Jokic for much of that game. And so if you have LeBron playing the five, then get another big out there and try to beat them up on the boards and get them exhausted. Yes.
No kidding. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, this Lakers defense was unbelievable in the fourth quarter. Swarming, you know, giving issues to Brunson. They're like, the Lakers are huge. They're just big. I know, like, they don't have a true center, but they're big across positions. But that's where with the Knicks, it's like, well, why not go with two bigs to be bigger at the five and bigger at the four and try to overwhelm them in size, maybe crash the boards a little bit more, create second chance opportunities. I'm just a little confused with why New York does that. But then again, why should I be confused? Tibbs has been like this for a decade. This is old news. Like, this is nothing new. Knicks fans know this as well. So, like, maybe I shouldn't be confused. But with the Lakers, that was an amazing comeback, dude. Like, holding the Knicks to 15 points, I know the Knicks offense was stagnant. It was all Brunson, no scheme, no movement, no plays, nothing, no creativity. But the Lakers are a part of that as well. And I was impressed. Luka's effort, he had like some good second efforts on a drive by Josh Hart where, you know, he stops him once and he gets a little second effort opportunity. LeBron, obviously, DFS. But it just feels like the more and more you watch this Lakers defense, it feels real. I'm buying it, Tom. Are you buying this Lakers defense performing at the elite level that it is?
Yeah, man. Can you imagine if we get a Warriors-Lakers matchup in the first round? How fun that would be. I mean, that could be a Western Conference matchup right there. Western Conference Finals matchup. Like, I still think the Thunder are going to win this whole thing. But the high quality of these two teams since they made their acquisitions, they're elite teams. And with the Lakers, the effort level, and I'm telling you, Doncic is so underrated. He got so overrated as like a defender, and then now he's underrated as a defender, where it's like he's giving a lot of high effort plays, and he's giving a lot of energy, and he's got a lot of steals. He's making plays. And I think that's key, and that's indicative of LeBron and JJ Redick getting that out of him. Another reason why trading this dude to the Lakers was so logically obvious to backfire in ways that were so predictable that, like, yeah, Luka Doncic is giving a lot of extra efforts that you lit a fire under this dude's ass. So you're looking at Luka already giving more effort offensively than he defensively. He comes out in overtime, hits the jumper, then hits the three, 5-0 start. It basically, the game ended right there. You know, yes, the Knicks came back in overtime, but the fact that you have Luka Doncic that can come out of overtime and carry that offense and give them a 5-point lead instantly, it's not fair, man. It's not fair that the Lakers keep getting these dudes out of thin air. It's nuts.
it's just, I still can't believe it when I see it on the floor. I'm watching the game.
Yeah, Brian Anderson said that in the middle of the game. He was like, I can't believe Luka is a Laker. And I was like, did he mean to say that?
It's just like I'm watching like the best 2K graphics, like future 2K, like 2K two decades from now. It's just like, what? How is this actually a real thing? But yeah, I'm buying their defense. Luka's looking more and more like himself. I'm buying the Lakers as a contender. It's going to be, I like you said, Lakers Warriors be very fun to watch in the first round if we end up getting that. The Knicks right now in that game, they got Karl Anthony Towns back. He was out on Tuesday against the Warriors for personal reasons. Now, this is related to a little bit of drama. Draymond went on his podcast on Friday morning, and he said there's rumors that Kat didn't want to play in that game because Jimmy Butler's in Golden State. He didn't want to be in the building. Well, turns out Kat was at his girlfriend's friend's funeral who died of breast cancer. So Draymond, an ass, old news there. You know, so I wonder if Draymond knew. Probably not. But for Karl Anthony Towns, good to see him back on the floor, of course.
Yeah, this is when Draymond needs to close his third eye. Like, there was no other. Yeah, just don't. Just don't go there.
I know. I know. Well, seriously.
on that note, with Karl Anthony Towns, I just, they need to get better defense, and maybe it's the too big lineup. But the Lakers couldn't get their offense going. Karl Anthony Towns, it wasn't his best game coming back from the absence. LeBron guarding him. I still like LeBron with the clutch shots that he had in this game and the big plays that he had in this game, the passing, the free throws, the fact that he's basically a big now, he's setting a lot more screens. This is something that Eric Spoelstra wanted to unlock with LeBron, is him at the four and being Karl Malone or being the numbers advantage. When Luka gets trapped, they can give it to LeBron in that Draymond Green role, and then it's 4-on-3. The Lakers offense, man, they always seem to have numbers advantages. And it's because they have to figure out a way to guard Luka and double team him. But you can't do that because they got LeBron. You give LeBron with his numbers advantage, and it's going to be tic-tac-toe bucket. And a lot of times that happened where he's hitting Jackson Hayes, and then great kick out when he's rolling down the paint, kick out to three. I think it was Austin Reeves in the left corner. And it's great offense, man. JJ Redick is coaching his ass off. This is a great, great resurgence for them. And Luka, the only thing I wrote down in my notes here, stop complaining to the refs, falling back into old habits on this one. And he was verging on getting tossed in this game. This was the worst of Luka when it comes to complaining to referees in this one.
Yes. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of flopping and complaining in that first half. It's between Brunson and Reeves and Luka. And, yeah, the Cat drama was not the only Cat drama, the only media drama this week. Kendrick Perkins said earlier in the week that the Lakers saved the NBA. And then Charles Barkley on the TNT broadcast comes out and he calls Perk an idiot and a fool. And he says only ESPN only talks about the Lakers and the Warriors. Nobody talks about the Cavs and the Thunder. He said ESPN talks about second place teams. And he said, quote, y'all talk about teams that had two great weeks. Then Perkins went on X and posted, tell that senior citizen Charles Barkley that I'll be around when he sees an idiot or a fool in person and make sure he keeps.
Did he really say that?
Yeah, he really said that. It's a real post.
They're going to be teammates really next year, that. Right?
I know. Well, Charles was also saying, well, you know, we're going to be at that network next year, too. Tom, so like,
Charles
Barkley
is senior citizen. This is nuts, dude. This is nuts.
It's all silly. It's like high school level drama. But there's you know, me being like mediator for them. Perkins is crazy for that take. Like, the Lakers didn't save the season. They just spiked interest. And Charles, I mean, like, I think there's a little bit of projection here, too. It's not like TNT hasn't talked about top teams. It's not like TNT doesn't have the Who He Play For segment involving Charles. And I think Charles is probably a little salty because he's been a hater against the Lakers all year. He questioned the LeBron-Luka fit. So I think it's a little bit of both here. Like, Perk had a crazy take, and Charles probably salty about the fact he's looking wrong about the Lakers.
Wait, so Charles went at ESPN for talking about a second place team as if like,
yeah,
like the Celtics.
He said a team that had two great weeks, even though the Lakers have had an elite defense for almost 2 months now, and have played great basketball going back even further than that.
Remember, he was hating on JJ Redick earlier this season when JJ was talking about like we have similar thing to what LeBron reiterated a couple weeks ago. Yes. And Charles just went nuts about JJ Redick. And I continue to believe all JJ Redick needed to say in that next press conference was case closed. Told you so. Like that Charles was going at him and talking all of this trash about the Lakers when it's just like, this is exactly what JJ Redick's point was. This is exactly LeBron James's point was. And so it's going to be, I'm very excited. Hey, you talked about media drama. I wanted to just reference this. Do you remember when Jalen Brunson in that game against the Lakers had that and one, that clutch and one, and Spike Lee was going nuts and like jumping around and was in Jalen Brunson's face? If you go back and watch that clip, go back and watch Larry David sitting courtside, he didn't even flinch. He had his legs crossed in that very Larry David pose on the courtside. And it was just amazing that like Jalen Brunson hits that shot. The place is going nuts. Larry David couldn't be bothered. And meanwhile, Spike Lee is just going bonkers on the sidelines. And it's just like, that is just such a Larry David moment there that he was just chilling. He was just, yeah, couldn't be bothered.
Well, thankfully he didn't stick his leg out and trip anybody.
Oh my God. Where's Shaq? Yeah, man, that was a crazy game, dude. That was so much fun. It felt like a playoff game. And OG for a while, he was guarding Luka pretty well. But the Knicks ran out of gas, and it's the same story as last year. It's like just when they don't need an injury, you had Jalen Brunson go down. Hopefully, he's back soon.
Tom, you're currently in a hotel room right now because you've been in Portland this entire week doing pregame, halftime, and other Blazers broadcast duties in person with the legend, Neil Everett. How's Portland been? You've been there like a week now. You're basically a citizen. How are you liking? Any good restaurants? What's the vibe?
Oh, the vibes are very strong in Portland. I love Portland. It's a great city. And, dude, it was like 50 degrees and sunny. Not a cloud in the sky today. So I just spent like half the day just walking around the city. Went to the Hoyt Arboretum at the Washington Park. You know, touched some sequoias and redwoods. It's just beautiful city that you can just drive like 10 minutes and have just an amazing forest just right there in the city. Food. Shout out to Khan, Gregory Gourdet's restaurant.
I was gonna ask that. I have that right now. Khan, because it's Haitian restaurant. I grew up with a ton of Haitian people in Brockton, Mass. Khan is like on top of my list in the U.S. to go to for like the best Haitian food, apparently. That's literally Khan. I was gonna ask you about that.
It's one of the hardest reservations to get, and luckily I was solo.
Really?
I got off the plane. I put my bags in the hotel room and I went in the Uber and I went straight there.
It's that hype, Tom? It's like number one. I didn't know. I did not know this. I just knew like it's some of the best Haitian food in the country, apparently, because some of my best friends are Haitian. Sorry.
Oh my God. It's so good. All the Blazers folks eat there. Like if you go on a random night, like the staffers will eat there. They love this place. It's great food. Wow. There was another Top Chef chef that was eating there. Like as soon as I walk in, I'm like, oh, this is big time. So the key is for those who want to eat there, just a little tip, follow their Instagram, Khan Restaurant, and put the notifications on for their stories because they will post cancellations to their stories. What? And then you can go and snag a seat. And luckily I was solo and I walked in. She's like, we just had a cancellation. Step right in if you'd like to take a seat. It was incredible. I had this whole snapper that had this tamarind chili pineapple sauce that was outrageous. jollof rice on the side. It was crazy good. It's a great restaurant. I also recommend Eem, E-E-M, the coconut curry soup with brisket burnt ends. Outstanding. A Pizza Scholl's has New Haven style pizza. I went there last night with Neil Everett, my producer. It was not like Pepe's or Sally's level, but it is legit great pizza. So shout out to the Pizza Scholl's spot that had the NBA games on while I was there. Food here in Portland is outrageous.
So it's almost 2 a.m. East Coast right now as we record. I'm getting hungry. I want have some munchies right now.
Yeah. Khan, Eem, and a Pizza Scholl's. Those are my three recs for folks to go see.
The other restaurants I have on my Portland list from friend recommendations is Canard, which is a French restaurant.
Oh, went there too. The steam burgers at Canard, unbelievable. What? So they're so good. Let's see if we go
three for three. Jeju, Korean food.
I haven't gone there. No.
Okay. All right. Cool. No, okay. I love Korean food. Korean food is some of my favorite food. Tom, I'm glad you've enjoyed Portland.
Kevin, it's been a great week. Very pumped and jacked to be here again with you. And the Blazers, we'll see how they do against the B team for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But man, it's been awesome.
I'm looking forward to watching it, Tom. Keep up the great work. Thanks for joining me again today. Coming up, we have AJ DiBonsa, incoming freshman at BYU. From Brockton, Massachusetts. That's why I wanted to talk to AJ. We're both Brockton boys. Yeah, it's coming up, Tom. Yeah, I interviewed AJ DiBonsa at All-Star Weekend in San Francisco. Good conversation. He's still just a teenager, still getting his media training, but it was a fun conversation with AJ. So that's coming up next. Joining me now is AJ DiBonsa from Brockton, Massachusetts, upcoming number one ranked freshman going to BYU. AJ, how you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on today, man. I appreciate it. Let's use this as like an intro to AJ. You're going to be top ranked player entering college, eventually, potentially the number one pick in the NBA draft. Let's use this as like a get to know you conversation. So a lot of people watching this, they may have read the name, looking ahead to 2026 mock drafts or seeing you committed to BYU. I'm curious, though, like, how would you introduce your game or describe your game to people who have never watched you play basketball before?
I think I'm a simple player, but I try to give the crowd what they want, but I try to play the right way.
What does that mean? You're a simple player, but you give the crowd what they want?
Like, I try to be efficient, try to take the right shots, but, I mean, I try to give highlight plays, highlight dunks, threes.
Let's go through, like, some scouting report basics. How tall are you? How long is your wingspan?
I'm listed at 6'8", but my dad claims I grow. Every day.
Really? I mean, you did look taller to me. Yeah. Like when you first walked in, I've been around 6'8 people. You looked more like 6'9 to me.
Yeah.
You haven't been measured though?
I haven't measured myself in a couple months. So I might be 6'9 now.
And that's without shoes?
Without shoes.
What's your wingspan?
7'1".
Okay. And you use that wingspan a lot defensively.
Yeah.
To me, like when I watch you play, like you grew up in Brockton, Mass. I grew up in Brockton, Mass. We watched the Celtics growing up. You remind me mindset wise, trash talk wise of KG. For real? Defensively.
That's not a bad
You talk.
That. I never heard that one before.
Never?
No.
No? The mindset?
No, I never heard it.
Never heard that?
No.
I'm not talking game-wise. I'm talking like this know, dude's like, an MF-er on the court.
No, he is. But nobody's ever like said that to me.
Do you view it as a compliment?
It is a compliment. Okay. He's one of the best trash talkers in history.
Have you always been a trash talker?
I'm not really a trash talker.
You just get emotional. Yeah, Stare downs after a dunk.
I'm passionate. But if you talk to me, I'll talk back.
I see. I mean, I think with you offensively, a lot of people will compare you to like a T-Mac as a classic NBA player. Are there anybody that you would bring up yourself as a comparable for yourself?
Yeah, I think T-Mac was probably the most accurate one I've got. But I like Kawhi. I like Paul George. Those like three. To but me, I take it's in bits from a lot of people. I watch a lot of film.
Kawhi for the two-way.
Yeah.
Paul George, I don't see as much. Paul George is two-way, but he's like so he's, cool when he's plays.
Very smooth. So that,
he's so
I'm
smooth.
Not as smooth.
No.
I'm not as smooth.
But you use the way you move on the floor. Like to me, you remind me of like a taller Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Herky-jerky. Don't know what's coming.
That's whose film I've been watching a lot.
You've been watching a lot of SGA?
A lot of Shai, a lot of T-Mac.
What do you like about SGA's game?
He plays at his own pace, and he does like the same three moves, and it works every time. So it's like not really – it's a lot. Like it's simple. Like simple. He uses three moves.
And with you, you're, what, 3-4 inches taller than him?
Exactly.
More size. You still have a good handle as well. Do you feel like your handle's tightened up a bit in recent years?
It definitely tightened up from recent years, but it can definitely improve still.
I mean, because we're talking about, like, Paul George being fluid, SGA being more herky-jerky. Mm-hmm. Have you always recognized that style in your game, or do you want to get more smooth on the floor?
No, I want to get more smooth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just looks better for, like, to the open eye.
Yeah. So. I mean, does that matter, though, if it works?
I mean, it's working for me, but also you want to give – what the fans want to see.
I see. So you like being a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
I see. Have you always been that way?
Yeah.
I see. What is that? What is it about it? Why?
I don't know. I'm just naturally like, I mean, I've naturally been like a exciting player. So that's been like my style of game. So, I mean, I just like giving the crowd a show.
I mean, the exciting plays, big dunks in traffic, defensive intensity, great shot making, contested shots. What are, like, we're talking about some of the highs of your game. What are some of the areas that you feel like you need to improve at?
3-point percentage, I should be 40s or higher.
What is it now, this season,
approximately? It should be mid or high 30s. Right now? 35 plus.
What about from the free throw line? Are you right now?
Actually, I improved. I was like at 90 in the beginning of the year, then I went to like 70. I don't know. I kept on missing.
So maybe now you're towards the middle?
I'm 80, probably 80 probably right now.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, that needs to get better. Turnovers, just cut down on turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be playing. It'll cut down like eventually, but I have the ball in my hands a lot.
If you could download any one skill from an NBA player, past or present, what would that be and why?
I mean, I might as well take LeBron, right? Just might as well.
Well, what from, like, what specifically? What move or
just
skill?
IQ.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can see the game before. I can see it before it happens, but he can see it, like, three times as much as I am seeing it.
Is it, I mean, Victor Wembanyama was, you know, interviewed for NBA All-Star Weekend, and they asked him who's the most underrated NBA player, and he said LeBron James, which is kind of an unusual thing to say when you're talking about one of the greatest players ever. He says he's underrated. I kind of agree because, like, look at what he's doing at 40 years old.
That's not everybody knows he's doing that. He's not underrated though.
But underrated.
Everybody says that he shouldn't be doing this at 40.
But there's certain people who have him ranked as the 15th best player in the NBA. He's better than that at this point.
Now, there's a lot of guys that's like stat wise, he should. That's probably around. But like what he's doing at 40 is crazy. We've never really seen it before.
It's nuts. Isn't that underrated?
Not really.
No.
I think people know that LeBron is LeBron. He's not really underrated.
I mean, I'm the dude who's always...
If you asked me, I wouldn't have said LeBron.
Who is the most underrated player in the NBA?
I like J-Dub from the Thunder. I like Brandon Ingram. I like a lot of guys. Peyton Pritchard? Yeah.
Pritchard could average 20 if he had the ball on a different team, right?
Exactly.
And J-Dub, I mean, one of the better two-way guys in
the
NBA.
Yeah, he's all-star this year, so, I mean, I don't know if we want to count that as underrated.
I mean, with J-Dub, it's interesting, like, for the Thunder, like, how much have you watched? Like, I know you're watching SGA for, you know, learning from him and adapting some of that into your game, but how much are you watching, like, full Thunder games?
No, I actually watch J-Dub, like, defensive highlights, because I'd be watching, like, defensive highlights, and he's one of the people I'd be watching.
What does he do defensively that you feel like is a good example with him being a high-level defender, something that you feel like you can learn from?
Because he guards 1-4, 1-5. So he can switch on. A lot of people can only guard like three positions. He can guard basically all five.
I mean, they'll have him defending Scottie Barnes one game, 6'8", 6'9", exactly. And then they'll have him defending, you know, Donovan Mitchell the next game.
Exactly.
Do you think you have that type of versatility?
Yeah, I'm getting better at it, but I guard ones and I guard fives.
Even at like, I mean,
at the high school level.
At 6'8", 6'9".
Yeah.
For you, like, I think for a guy that size, sometimes they might not guard ones as much. In what ways do you feel like you need to improve in order to do that effectively once it comes to the NBA level?
I just think quicker feet, just footwork-wise, to being able to keep up with guards that are faster.
Mm-hmm. So is that something that like, you feel like just comes over time with physical training, or is it more technique?
Both.
Both?
Because once you get the training, you can perform techniques that'll help him be easier to be able to like cross steps and stuff like that. I can fit in with bigs because they're not as fast as me, but I'll naturally get stronger over the years and I'll be able to bump back.
What are some things specifically that you're working on right now with your game?
A lot of shots. And I actually work on defense, but a lot of shots, a lot of mid-post, turnarounds.
So a lot of like mid-range right now,
yeah,
too.
Mid-range threes.
What do you think about the way the game's evolved? Like, it's so much layups, dunks, threes right now. Mid-range is more reserved for the high-level players such as yourself. So, like, that's an area you'll be empowered by a coach to use. But a lot of systems, it's threes and layups. What do you think about that growth of the game?
I'm not mad at threes and layups. Threes are worth more than twos, but all the best scorers have a mid-range package, and I'm trying to be a good scorer, so I'm gonna add that to my game.
Now, with this season, Utah Prep, you guys lost, I think, on Friday night. You're 18-9 on the season, probably not to the level that you'd hoped for so far this year. What have been some lessons you've learned through some of the ups and downs this season?
I mean, we've been through a lot this season. Coaching change, players transferring. Mm-hmm. But we just learn how to adapt. So, like, when it gets to college, like, if you have something in the portal, if you have a new coach, you just know how to adapt.
What's something you learned about that with the adaptation?
I mean, it's hard, but, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to go play basketball and go get a win. So, I mean, we've learned a lot from just losing games. Like, okay, now we know what to do for you.
So it's, like, kind of, like, compartmentalizing, you know, stress or concern about some of that stuff and focusing just on the game itself.
Just on the game.
I see. Now with you, is there a time in your life, like, an example of – you know, a failure or a setback that you feel like made an imprint and helped you learn?
I think this year, just us losing as many games, like, I don't think I lost as many games last year. So just learning how to learn off losses is just helping me.
I mean, you've been number one ranked ever since you've been on rankings. How do you maintain that edge and that mindset and that high work ethic despite always being number one? Like, do you need to continue challenging yourself? Like, what is it about that?
Yeah, just challenge yourself. Just stay hungry. I mean, we're not there yet. We're still in high school. We still got to get to college, hopefully make it to the NBA. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just staying number one is going to help me in the long run, but I didn't really do anything yet, so I still got to stay hungry. I'm not going to stop working because I'm committed and nothing like that.
You had mentioned in another interview and some comments that sort of went viral that the Spurs and the Magic are two of the teams that you know really like in the NBA. What is it about those teams' style of plays or the players on that team that really appeal to you?
I mean, I like both squads. I mean, my mind changes every day. So now, like, I'm in the mindset of, like, whoever drafts me. I don't really have a specific team. But, I mean, I just – when I was talking, I just liked
the
NBA.
You get media trained to say whatever team drafts you next?
I was watching more basketball games, and I'm like, I mean, I think I could fit in on any team. I'm just watching. I'm like, I mean, I don't know if I want to – I was saying it because, like, no tax. Because San Antonio and Orlando. But, I mean, I think I could really fit in anywhere depending on my play style.
I mean, that's a good reason.
But if you really think basketball-wise – I don't know, whoever gets hopefully the number one pick.
I mean, we'll find out there in 2026. You know, we talked about the evolution of the game. You know, part of that's analytics driven. You know, the math, you know, three's worth more than two, layups rather than mid-range, even short mid-range. Do you use numbers at all with your training? Any advanced analytics or anything like that?
Not right now.
No.
High school doesn't really have that, but
do you want to use it in
next
college?
Next year we'll have it.
And has BYU kind of like teased some stuff that you might be able to use next year when you're in your system?
So our analytics guy is actually from the Phoenix Suns. So I'll have a lot of insight.
I see. So you're looking forward to having some numbers then.
Yeah.
But why is that? Like, how do you think it would help inform the way you're going to continue improving over the
years? I mean, I never used it. So, I mean, we'll see if it helps or not. If it doesn't really help, I mean, I probably won't use it. I mean, because I know, like, my strengths and whatnot. So, I mean, if I'm missing shots I know I can make, I'm going to still shoot those shots.
Mm-hmm. Now, you announced your decision with Red Bull. You get the hat on right now. You go in there next season. Yegor Denham right now is their top freshman, could end up a lottery pick. Do you have any expectation that he could come back, play with you next season?
If he's a lottery, I would expect him to leave.
Mm-hmm. I would too.
But if he wants to stay, we can go make a run next year.
I mean, I do feel like BYU, like when you were on with Stephen A. Smith, he was kind of shocked that you went to BYU and didn't go to a powerhouse, college powerhouse, like a UNC, a traditional school like that. Were you surprised by the reaction?
Not really. No.
Why not?
Because
it's BYU?
I mean, I think everybody thought I was going to BYU regardless. Yeah. Because my crystal ball was BYU. So I didn't really.
So the whole time for you it was BYU?
Yeah.
And you're in Utah right now with Utah Prep as well.
Exactly.
What do you like about Utah?
Nobody bothers me.
Really?
Yeah. I'm in Hurricane, Utah. Nobody knows it as that.
Nobody?
Nobody.
You're 6'8". Nobody says, do you play basketball when you go in an elevator? Yeah,
but that's like, they don't have no idea who I am. They just ask me, do I play basketball?
So you like to be anonymous.
Yeah.
Is that part of the reason with staying with BYU?
Yeah. No distractions.
I see. I mean, because like where certain other schools, there's the parties and people on your DMs and all that. BYU has got that honor code, that culture, yeah, everything there. So that's part of the appeal.
Yeah. I wouldn't have done it at another school anyway, but it's going to be way easier to do it at BYU.
Interesting. I see. And with them, I mean, it's interesting with college nowadays with the NIL, the amount of money that players can receive is, it's not quite what like the number one pick can make, but it's a lot. Do you think there could be a world in which, whether it's you or somebody else, that you see like a top potential number one player stay another year in school? Even Cooper Flagg this year had mentioned, he's like, I want to stay at Duke. I don't think he will, but I'd imagine that because of the NIL money, that option could be more realistic for a lot of players of your caliber.
I don't think so, because I think the number one pick money is just going to
keep going up
way rather than NIL money.
For sure. And plus the NBA is ultimately the dream.
Yeah. So I don't really think that will.
Do you think players should be able to go straight from high school to the NBA?
I mean, if they feel like they're ready. I was going to go to college regardless. But if someone feels like they're ready, you can go test that.
Really? Out. You would have regardless?
Yeah.
How come?
I told my mom in like fifth grade I was going to go to college.
I see. So keeping that promise.
Yeah.
I see. Who was your biggest influence as a kid? You mentioned your mom.
My mom and dad.
Mom and dad?
Yeah.
Your dad's here right now.
Yeah.
In what way was he an influence?
I mean, they're just both immigrants. My dad's from Congo. My mom's from Jamaica. And they just came and just raised three kids, instilling like discipline, God. Everything's like earned, not given.
How old are your siblings?
My older sister is 21 and my younger sister is 16 now.
And you're how old?
I'm 18.
18 years old. When do you turn 19?
Next year.
Okay. So you turned 18 just recently. Okay, yeah. I see. And with your parents, you guys were landed in Brockton, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
We're both from Brockton.
Yeah.
How would you describe Brockton? Like your first day of school at BYU, everybody's introing each other. Like, oh, I'm from this place. I like these things. It gets to you and you say, I'm from Brockton. They ask you to describe Brockton. How would you describe it to somebody who has no idea what it is?
A cool city. We got some legends. We got Rocky Marciano mm-hmm. out there. We got Marvin Hagler. But I mean, it's nothing really special about Brockton. It's just like, if you're from there, you're from there. Everybody knows about Boston. I mean, Brockton's like a not well-known city. It's only a well-known city if you're from Massachusetts.
Originally, the nickname of the city was City of Champions.
I mean, we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rocky Marciano, Marvin Hagler, potentially AJ DiBonta. We're always
the City of Champions. I think Brockton has one of the most championships like from Massachusetts, so. I mean, you can't really hate on a name.
When people talk about Brockton, it's always boxers.
Yeah.
Do you want to change that, make it about basketball?
Yeah, for sure.
That matters?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I mean, I don't know how long ago Rocky Marciano and them played, but I mean, we need other sports. Boxers is cool. They have statues and all that, mm-hmm. but we gotta have basketball, we gotta have football.
In my podcast background, I got two bobbleheads. I got a Rocky Marciano mm-hmm. and a Marvin Hagler behind me.
Yeah.
I need an AJ.
Yeah, you need an AJ.
Is there a bobblehead of you that exists?
I don't have
yet?
A bobblehead
no?
yet.
No bobblehead yet?
No.
Commission one of those. Get a little Red Bull hat on there, right?
Yeah.
That's possible. Maybe I'm sure someday the team you get drafted to or BYU, they'll make a bobblehead of you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Do you look for, I mean, you talk about, I'm curious, like, you talk about wanting, like, liking Utah because the lack of attention. Nobody knows you. That's going to change.
Well, BYU?
It's going to change. I mean, it's going to change in BYU. It's going to change with the NBA as your stardom increases, where everybody's going to recognize you at some point.
Yeah.
If things work out the way you want it to work out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just the way I was raised. Like, I'm just like chill, low key. Like, I'd rather be behind the scenes than in the scene. But I know that the profession I'm chasing requires that. So I'll deal with it and I'll be happy to deal with it. But right now, mm-hmm. I'm taking full advantage
sure.
of not being.
What do you like to do behind the scenes? Sleep. Okay, you like to, I mean, who doesn't like to sleep? Like, you get something wrong with you if you don't like to sleep. You need sleep. Sleep and eat. Like eating at home?
Eating at home, eating out.
What type of food do you like the most?
Seafood boils.
Seafood? Okay, I see. Do you cook yourself?
No, I don't cook.
No. Are you ever going to learn
to cook? I used to cook. Like, I used to, like, me and my sister used to have, like, cook-offs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting lazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're an NBA, you know, got NBA money, you'll have a pro chef.
Yeah, I can't wait because I stopped cooking.
I mean, you won't ever have to learn to cook, really.
Yeah.
When that time comes. So, what about video games?
Surprisingly, I'm probably the only hooper you know that doesn't
really play video games. Not at all. Why? Waste of time.
It's boring to me.
Boring.
And in quarantine, I used to sit on the game. After I used to play basketball, I used to play like Fortnite and all that, but started getting bored.
Why is that? Like, is it because like basketball is a game? There's other games that you're playing that are bigger than that.
I mean, yeah, I'd rather play basketball than play basketball on like a TV.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's probably goes without saying, right? Yeah. Like, it's probably not even comparable.
Yeah, but I mean, people find it fun. You can find it fun. Me personally, I don't.
I mean, what do you watch movies?
No, I fall asleep.
No.
Yeah, I'm just boring.
Music?
I listen to music.
Do you play any instruments?
I used to.
Not anymore?
Not anymore.
It's got boring?
Yeah.
What instruments did you play?
I played trumpet.
Trumpet's boring, right?
Yeah, I played trumpet in like elementary.
Your dad make you play trumpet?
I don't even know how I got into that. I think I volunteered and then I ended up like, I don't know why I volunteered.
What about guitar? Something cool. Cool instrument.
No, there wasn't no guitar at school. You had to do like trumpet, trombone, mm-hmm. saxophone.
Singing?
No, I don't.
No.
I'd be having concerts in the shower.
And everybody's shut the door.
Yeah, I don't
shut
be
up.
Singing, no.
No, you're not a good singer?
I think I can sing.
Good singer in your head.
Yeah, in my head. Like, I'd be rapping in my
you're
head.
You're like the people who try out for American Idol. They think they're a good singer in their
head. I wouldn't try out for American Idol.
No.
I'm realistic.
You do the voice.
Not even now.
No. America's Got Talent.
My house.
Okay, I see. So what else do you do? Is it just basketball and sleep?
Yeah,
that's it?
Books and ball.
Books.
Yeah.
Books. Okay, so you read.
No, I don't read.
You don't read.
I just have to do schoolwork.
Okay.
Like books and ball.
So just the books are to get by right now, but
like the books is like school.
I see.
I just
use
it like as a 2Bs.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes. But ultimately, you seem hyper focused then on the dream.
Yeah, I am, but I'm also just like a boring kid. Like, I don't really like doing anything.
I see. Except basketball.
Yeah.
What do you love about basketball?
I don't know. I'm just a natural competitor. I have two sisters, so I just grew up just like, mm-hmm. I need to beat you.
Did they play too?
Well, no. Okay. I tried to get my answers.
So you're the type who competes at anything like that you're involved in?
Yeah, like when we were younger, we used to like last to get in the car, last to finish their food. Like, yeah, it was bad.
This might be a strange question, but like, for example, Jokic. People say Jokic doesn't even like basketball. And even if that's true, Jokic, he's a competitor. He loves competition. He loves to win. He hates to lose. So, like, with him, I think he has a major love for competition, even more so than the love for basketball. With you, is that almost where it stems from? Like, just that love for competition and competing and winning and all that comes with it.
I think it's both, though, because every sport, you can compete in every sport, but I don't love every sport. Mm. So I think it's a mix of both.
I see. So what is it you love specifically about basketball?
There's a lot of action. A lot of action in basketball. There's a lot of things that you can do to get people on their feet.
You bring that up sometimes. You like to get the crowd going.
Yeah.
Does that energize you further?
Yeah.
What's it like playing in an empty gym versus like a crowded arena?
Now, empty gyms be live though. Like open runs. Maybe live.
Because the competition's with the players.
Yeah, the competition's like, I mean, everybody's like, there's no nervousness because, like, no fans. But, like, a crowd's obviously, like, good, too, because everybody just live. Even, like, away games, it'd be fun.
Do you ever get nervous before games?
No, no more.
But you used to?
Yeah.
How do you deal with nerves when they happen?
I mean, I got to play, so.
Yeah, you just
Once I get a steal or hit a shot, I'll be fine.
I see. So it's just about getting past it, and you know you will.
Yeah.
With the NBA, you know, we talked a little bit about the evolution earlier and how things have changed. How do you think it will change in the years to come?
Just like play style, like
anything that comes to mind.
I don't know what new rules they'll add. I heard Adam Silver talking about 10-minute quarters. I don't know how true that is. I mean, I'd rather play the 12, me personally. I know they're going to add two new teams.
Yep. But I don't know. Vegas and Seattle.
Yeah, I don't really know any rules that would really change the NBA.
Do you know what year that's going to happen? The two teams?
No, I don't.
No, I don't either. I'm not sure. Maybe he'll announce it this weekend. I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see. Cause
but I don't think it's going to be. I mean, it can't be this year or next year.
No, it's too soon. I don't think it would be your draft either. Maybe the one after that. But, I mean, I think it's interesting, like, you look at like the top 3-point percentages right now, mm-hmm. a lot of it is just big after big after big after big. Like, I think the way the game is changing, we're seeing it just right now, which is every player has perimeter yeah. skill at this point.
Yeah.
I wonder if like there'll be like an opposite player that comes like a Shaq someday where it like moves it towards the interior, at least for his individual case yeah, at some point.
I mean, if you're dominant, you're dominant. Even like, I mean, I know people used to hate on Giannis saying he had no shot and he won MVP without even shooting threes a lot, but he added his little mid-range bag now. Have you seen he's shooting that?
And with you, I'm, you know, we talk about the pull-up shooting ability, all that, the dunks and everything like that. What about your playmaking ability? How important of a tool is that going to be for you as years this on-ball presence in the years to come?
I mean, it's important. I mean, if you can draw a lot of attention, it'll just create way more open opportunities for your teammates.
Would you describe yourself as score first?
I was actually naturally pass first. I'm naturally pass first, but I mean, I've just
been more score first this year. Yeah, is that due to the role on the team?
I just think I've been scoring a lot more points.
Do you get like equal satisfaction from an assist as you do with your own buckets?
I mean, I like seeing everybody eat. It makes the game more fun, but I mean, if the game requires me to score, I'll go score and go trust myself to go score.
So it's more like you have the mindset like you do what the team needs.
Yeah.
And that's partially why I'm sure you play the way you do on defense.
Yeah,
like exactly. You're, like I said, you are like an MF-er on defense.
Yeah.
Like the hustle just never stops.
Yeah, I try.
It's kind of rare.
I be tired though. I try to.
You play through the tiredness?
Yeah.
It's kind of rare for a player like, that's what's so admirable about SGA this year with OKC. How often is it that a guy carries the offense with the usage that he has, but then also isn't taking possessions off on defense? It's like not often that players come along like that with SGA or like you right now at the high school level. That's rare, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes him him.
What makes you you?
What makes you me?
Do you view yourself as like undoubtedly number one prospect in your class?
Yeah, I always bet on myself if you ask me that question.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
That's going to stay?
Yeah.
There won't be any questions in the 2026 NBA draft with you, number one.
I'm always bet on myself.
I think that's a fair thing to do, AJ.
Yeah.
Appreciate you joining me today,
man. Thank you.
Thanks to Tom Haberstroh and AJ DeBonsa for joining today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thank you to Stone and Mike for producing it. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. Please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple's, a thumbs up on YouTube. It really does help out the show. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back again next week.